believe that it is our God-given birthright to experience inner joy, peace, and unconditional love, to actually feel whole in body, in mind, and in spirit. And if that's what you want, then you're in the right place. And I hope that you and all of your friends join us every Wednesday from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern to learn how you can begin living the life you've always wanted to live. My name is Reverend Louisa Dyer. I am an interfaith and metaphysical minister and life coach. And my passion has always been spiritual connection, along with sharing what I've learned in this wild and crazy life I've lived about being happier, healthier, and more at peace inside. And so each week on Inner Divinity, we focus on what works, what actually helps, what really matters, so that we can have not only the energy, but the inspiration to begin living in the ways that we've always wanted to live. I know that each and every one of us is a divinely created being. And that divine spark of life, it's alive in each and every one of us. I know that because without it, we wouldn't be living. We would be what we call dead. We wouldn't be breathing, living, walking, talking. And because of that inner spark of life, that God spark, that inner divinity, we have the choice, and we also have the power to bring ourselves up. Sometimes we need a little help, but we can rise up out of depression, out of addiction, anger, grief, any suffering that we may have been experiencing. We can come up out of it. I know that because I've done it, and I've watched countless others do it as well. And so I really hope that you join me here every Wednesday from 1 to 3 Eastern, right here on 88.3 FM in Cincinnati, or online at WAIF883.org, as we tap into the power and the beauty and the divine love that actually is animating all forms of life, including yours and mine. There's never really anything that we need to get or gain or even do in order to feel that inner peace or happiness. There's really only stuff that we have to let go of, the stuff that has blocked our awareness of that God energy inside of us. You can call that your higher self, or you can call it Great Spirit, or unconditional love, or divine energy. It doesn't really matter what you call it, but it really does matter if you call on it. Because that divine power that lives in your heart, and mine, and in everyone else's, that divine power is actually ours as soon as we claim it. And that's really what this show is all about. And so I really want to thank you for listening. And I'd also like to let you know that if you would like some help with getting in touch with that higher self, that inner spirit inside of you, there is a free guided meditation on my website. There's also a whole lot of free information and other tools on my various websites. And you're invited to check those out if you would like to. And it's just my name, Louisa Dyer, louisadyer.com, louisadyer.net, and also thewowprocess.com. Lots of information on there if you want it. There's also a Facebook page for this show by the same name, Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. So if you're on Facebook and you'd like to connect, please do so. I'd love to hear any comments you have about what we've had on the show or what you'd like to see on the show. And I've also been inviting people to share their personal transformational stories, aha moments, anything that's happened that has made you come alive or recognize yourself as the divine being that you are, anything that has really turned your life around for the better. I've discovered over the years that when we hear one another's transformational stories, it wakes us up in a way that just reading an article just doesn't do. And so I invite you to share those stories, and that Facebook page or any of those websites is a way to get in touch with me. And let's see if you would like to be on the radio, either by the phone or come in the station if you're in the area. And so we begin each week, each show, with a little bit of music to uplift our spirits, to really begin to bring body, mind, and spirit into a greater harmony. And I'd also recommend that you let the body move if it really wants to. Because when the body's moving with music, it really begins to feel more strongly the spirit that's animating the body. So I'll be back in 5 or 10 minutes, and I really hope you join me for today's exploration of how to live a healthier, happier, more centered life. And here's some music to get us moving on that divine journey. Enjoy.
Singing Welcome Home. You are listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM on your dial, and also live streaming online at WAIF883.org. And today we have a special show that is from 1 to 3. Usually we are here from 2 to 3 on Wednesdays, and next week we will be here at 2, so I hope you join me then. The name of the show is Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. And what we're doing here is we're tapping into the source of life that lives inside each and every one of us, that, whatever you call that divine spark of life that actually animates every form of life, including you, including me. You can call that God or great spirit or universal energy. I don't really think it matters what you call it, but I do think it matters that you call on it. Because that divine core of us, that is where power and beauty and unconditional love, that's where it lives inside of us. It is life itself. So when we tap into that, not only do we feel happier, but we also can become healthier. It just feels good. And if we can actually learn to welcome that connection with that divine spark, we begin to wake up and live in ways that I think most of us have always wanted to live and just didn't know how for whatever reason. So today, as I was saying, I have a very special guest. Her name is Paulette Meyer, and I have featured some of her music on the show before. She is quite the committed peace activist and an incredible singer, and I have featured her Quaker Wisdom CD on the show before. We'll be hearing a little bit more of that today, but I'm hoping I'm going to get Paulette to sing some for us, and you're going to be really, really tickled by that. So before we get into that interview, I want to give you a couple of public service announcements, because WAIF is a listener-supported community radio station, and we support the community, and the community supports us very well, and we're very grateful for that. And so I want to tell you first about Grailville. Grailville is owned and operated by the Grail, which is an international movement of women in 18 countries working for social transformation. Grailville is located in Loveland, Ohio, and they offer programs on ecology, spirituality, feminism, the arts, and social justice. They also have meeting space for lots of different programs and people, and if you want to do wonderful things there, it's a beautiful place to do that. If you'd like more information on the programs offered at Grailville or on their meeting space, you can call them at 513-683-2340, and you can also check out their website at grailville.org, and I'll spell that for you. It is G-R-A-I-L-V-I-L-L-E, grailville.org. I also want to let you know about underwriting on WAIF. If you have a business that you would like to underwrite on WAIF, we offer very, very affordable rates. We can target your underwriting to any show that you choose, including this one. And if you'd like to know more about how to get your business information to our listeners, then you can call 513-351-1538 and find out how you can get your information to all of our wonderful listeners. The cost of underwriting is very affordable, and you can reach our community with your message. You can also contact them online at waif883.org. So I think what we're going to do here now is take a little music break. I'm going to let you hear a little bit of Paulette's music from her timeless Quaker Wisdom CD in Plain Song. We're going to listen to We Are a People. And you can find that, of course, on Paulette's website, which is lessonsongs.com. And when we come back, we will have Paulette in the studio. I'll see you back here in a few minutes, and I hope you enjoy.
We are a people that all have to know things and make for peace, love, and unity. It is our desire that others see
news of the world, and I just have to read you these words. They just blow me away. It says, it would go a great way to caution and direct people in their use of the world if we understood more about the creation of it. For how could we find the confidence to abuse it while we should see the great Creator stare us in the face in all and every part thereof? That was a quote from William Penn in 1693. I think that is so relevant for our world. If we actually felt it, saw it, understood that this is a divine creation, this world that we live in, and that we ourselves are divinely created beings, then how could we abuse this world or ourselves because we could see the Creator's face, you know, right there in front of us? Oh, I'm telling you, the words on this CD blow my mind. And I'm not sure we're going to focus on this CD so much today with Paulette. So that's why I wanted to start out with a few cuts from that. But I'd like to introduce you now to my very dear friend, Miss Paulette Meyer, who is an incredible singer and songwriter. And she's really, you know, we were talking about, how do you want me to introduce you? And she said, well, you know, I'm really not so much a musician. I'm more of a singer and songwriter. But really, I have a message. And that message is that we are born lovable and loving. And the only thing that goes wrong in our lives is that somehow we get hurt, we get wounded. And so that lovingness that is part of how we were divinely created is blocked. We don't have access to it. And I'm so grateful to hear those words today, because that's, of course, what we focus on every week here on Inner Divinity, is how do we get out of our own way to tap into that inner divinity, because that's where the love and the lovingness that we are lives, is inside of us. And you can call it your higher self or your true self or inner divinity. It doesn't matter. But I'm really glad that Paulette is here to share that message. So thank you, Paulette, for being here. And
thank you for having me, Louisa. I'm really thrilled to be here with you.
You're wonderful. I want you to speak up a little bit, please.
Okay.
There you go.
Is that better?
That's much better.
Okay.
Wonderful. So welcome very much.
Thank you. And I'm glad you said those words from William Penn, because William Penn was one of my favorite early Quakers, and I was just so inspired. And I got to live in Philadelphia for a period of time.
Wow.
And be a tour guide in the largest Quaker meeting house in the world in historic Philadelphia for a year, and volunteering. And I learned a lot about William Penn, and I felt in some ways that when I found these early Quaker writings that I came upon a tradition that I hadn't known about, and it felt like home in a way. And that's why I ended up landing in that faith tradition.
Isn't that wonderful to discover that there's a place that you feel like home when you didn't know that it existed?
Right.
It was.
It took me a while to get there.
I felt that way when I first discovered Science of Mind Church. I had been reading the writings for years, but I didn't know such a church existed.
Mm-hmm.
And some friend, when I moved back to the mountains in the late 90s, took me to a Science of Mind church, and I sat there with my mouth hanging open the whole time going, a church where people believe like I do? Oh, my goodness. It was really shocking. So that,
yeah.
when was that you became interested in and began settling into that Quaker faith?
Really, it was about the year 2000. I went to Texas, of all places. And actually, Quakers have this term called leadings. And having a leading, a spiritual leading, is meaning that there's this inner call. You know,
uh-huh.
Some people say a calling.
Right.
And I felt this I felt like the hound of heaven was after me or something to go to Texas. And I kept getting bombarded with messages about Texas. And so I finally talked to a friend who had some friends that lived in Austin, and she said, go there, just go there, you know, because she'd been hearing about this for a year and a half or something. So I did, and just had an incredible experience there when I went to visit, and then ended up getting offered very quickly a job there, and I was having a hard time finding work here.
Uh-huh.
And so I went down to Texas and ended up attending a Quaker meeting down there. I'd attended the Quaker meeting in Cincinnati for a while, but I don't know, circumstances just led to me getting more interested at that point in something, other things that happened. And then I started reading the early writings, and I was, that's what you described your experience of with the Science of Mind thing.
Right.
I felt like I had come home, that this was, and this was a tradition since the 17th century. And so there, I was raised Catholic and very, very devout, always just, you know, attending church, attending mass, attending novenas, doing all of that as a child was my whole life. And I hadn't found anything after that to sort of encompass me in a faith tradition where there's community and practices and things together. And I think that the Quaker faith was a good landing place for me after years of searching or not searching after leaving the Catholic Church.
Right. So you were raised pretty religious, pretty focused in a faith tradition, and then that sort of stopped working for you as you got older, or...
Well, I wrote a song about it, which I could sing.
How delightful. I think that would be wonderful.
I don't know if I'm coming through okay.
You're doing great.
This is sounding a little funny in the headphones.
Can you not hear yourself very well?
It's just maybe the microphone's a little on and off or something. But I wrote this as a way to process a lot of... I wasn't planning on starting out our interview like this, but so it goes. A lot of the pain of my life was having, in my 20s, having left the Catholic Church and going away from it, because it was, I grew up in a very devout family, and my whole family, even today, is still very devout in that faith tradition, and I loved so much about it, and the life that I've led since my 20s has been difficult because of not being part of that thing that was such a totally encompassing culture, you know, for me and faith. So I wrote this song a number of years ago to try to process some of the hurt and pain about having left that, and also some of the discovery since.
Right.
So I'll try singing it.
Okay.
I remember the moment I decided to leave. I was 23 at Mass at Holy Nativity. I was a young woman coming into my power, couldn't take one more day with the priest calling God Father. I wanted to see a woman up there leading the prayers and raising the cup to mystery, unity, brothers and sisters all in community. How do you leave the only family you have known? How do you walk away knowing you can't go home? There are rituals for joining rites until you die. But nothing when you decide to say goodbye. Generations before me stayed true to the faith. These were my people. No one had ever gone astray. My mother and father did all that they could to keep us in line, doing the things that good Catholics should. And I was devout. This faith was my life, my compass and guide for searching the signs for mystery, unity, brothers and sisters all in community. How do you leave the only family you have known? How do you walk away knowing you can't go home? There are rituals for joining rites until you die, but nothing when you decide to say goodbye. But I was a seeker on a path path of my own, finding new ways and treasures unknown. How to stay true to your path when you see a lifetime ahead cut off from family. How do you leave the only family you have known? How do you walk away knowing you can't go home? There are rituals for joining rites until you die. I've been nothing when you decide to say goodbye. Many days I've cursed the knowledge I gained that made me question and open up doors to so much change. And though the road I've walked has been laden with hurt, without the comfort of culture and loved ones from my birth, I couldn't deny the truth I was shown, the inner light leading me home to mystery, unity, brothers and sisters all in community. How do you leave the only family you have known? How do you walk away knowing you can't go home? There are no easy answers, no path is guaranteed, but staying true to yourself is what sets the spirit free.
My, thank you so much. Mystery and unity, community. That just about sums it up.
I think that's probably the only second time I've ever sang that song.
Wow, that really touched me, you know, because I went through a similar experience, and I've worked with, when you work like I do with people around spiritual issues, a lot of people have struggled with what you were just talking about, is I was raised with this, and this is all I knew, and this was how I knew have any kind of support or community or connection, and it doesn't work for me anymore, and I'm being called to I don't even know what, and it is a real struggle, and I'm so grateful in my heart that you were able to hear that calling, that leading, and found the Quaker place where you could settle into something, because I know a lot of people never find, I've never found, I mean, I couldn't stay with the Science of Mind, even though I said I went there and it was great, but it really wasn't a place I could settle. It just was like, wow, somebody believes like I do. That's miraculous. But I know a lot of people are searching for exactly that, a place to feel connected with God, with other people, and they haven't found the place where they can do that yet. And so when you sing that song, I think it really speaks to that struggle that we go through. But there's like, even though I felt the pain of it in my heart, there was also this incredible hope that kept coming forward of, oh, maybe there is a place. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot that is in, I want to say, in my original faith tradition of Catholicism. There's so much in it that is similar to the path of the Quakers, too, because it's grounded in this mystical connection. And so there's a lot there that I still appreciate, and I honor people, women, especially women, in a tradition where women are not allowed to be ministers and bishops and popes. I honor the women that have stayed in that tradition, even though I couldn't. And, yeah, I mean, I know there's lots more I could say about that. But
did that song help you? Did it give you some peace in moving forward, in letting go? And
I think so. I think so, to articulate it. It's been a life journey. I mean, I only found Quakers in 2000, and I was already nearing 50 years old. So it took a long time.
Right.
To find a faith tradition that I could feel really unified in and part of. So writing the song was really helpful, I think, for me to process a lot of the pain in my life.
And did you write that song before or after you did this Timeless Quaker Wisdom CD?
Before.
Before.
Yeah. I was actually, most of the songs I've written, Louisa, have been written in workshops. Not the children's songs, but most of my other songs have been in workshops where I've been with other songwriters. And I do that because it's very hard for me to claim the time for myself to sit down and write a song and focus like that. And I was at Pendle Hill at a workshop with David Roth, who's a wonderful man and singer and songwriter. Mm-hmm. It was a week-long workshop. And one of the writing prompts he suggested for songwriters was to take a moment in time that transformed your life forever.
Wow.
That if you can remember a moment when things were never the same after that moment. And this moment of sitting in this Catholic church on Sunday morning at a parish, you know, my mind immediately went to that moment when I thought, I can't do this anymore. So that's where the song came from.
Well, so would it be fair to say that songwriting has been a big part of your spiritual life, that it's fed you spiritually or fed your soul? Or would it be more accurate to sort of say that the other way, that, well, let me just ask you.
I think it's worked both ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I've always been a very serious person.
Oh, I can relate to that.
So as a child, I was always thinking and wanting to do the right thing and that kind of thing. And then as my life journey took me more out to the world with more diverse people and more aware of social justice or injustice and all the things that were wrong that I started seeing more and more of, I had this serious wanting to improve things and change things and bring awareness. And I think singing out, you know, gave me a voice in a sense. My singing voice gave me a voice. It's much easier for me to stand up in front of a crowd and sing than it is to talk. And it's more difficult to talk about myself, too. But singing comes easy. And I've sung a lot at various rallies in Cincinnati and in Washington, D.C. When people used to ask me, where do you sing with? I said, I'm a singer. And I would say, well, my usual venue is the Federal Building with the bullhorn. So I was fortunate. You know, I sang in choirs as a child. I sang Gregorian chant a lot. I still have the Requiem Mass in my being. I can sing the whole thing verbatim, by heart. And so I have that kind of chanting in my background. It's in my blood. So I resonate with that. And it wasn't until I was in graduate school, I think, at University of Cincinnati, and I started meeting other activists. I wasn't an activist at that point. I was introduced to some people in the German department at the University of Cincinnati. I met Diana Porter, and Diana Porter is a wonderful singer. She's one of the founding members of MUSE, Cincinnati Women's Choir.
Wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, and Diana and I were both active in the teachers union at the time, and Diana was a singer, and she got me singing for union things for teachers. In the teachers union, we worked together for a while. We lived together and worked together teaching German, and so I got pulled into a lot of singing through Diana and awareness of women as singers and introduced to the whole women's music movement.
Right.
Back then in the 70s, and that was an opening for me.
Right, you and Joan Baez.
Yeah. Well, Joan Baez, you know, 60s, I wasn't so much a part of that movement back then, but I certainly love her singing.
Okay, 70s, Holly Near.
Exactly, bingo. Yes, yes, that's it.
Let me get my decades straight. Yeah. So what? It's amazing to me that with your voice, it sounds like you sang when you were young and then you didn't for a while, and then there was a time where, because of someone else, you sort of got re-involved with singing. Part of me is very surprised that singing hasn't sort of always been the way that you, or one of the ways that you've uplifted yourself because you have such a clear voice.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I think in the tradition, the way that I grew up, the culture that I grew up in was very German, and it wasn't, if anybody would tell you what you were good at or something, if there was a fear, I think, that would go to your head. And so there was a holding back from affirming one's strengths. And I knew I was a good singer because I was chosen to sing in this special choir growing up in grade school for masses. And so I knew on some level that I was a good singer, but it was hard to take that in. So I didn't really think of it as being that special or something. And I think that's one reason why in my work with children I ended up gravitating towards peace education and doing a lot with peace education in schools and training teachers how to create peaceable classrooms and the role of affirmation, affirming children in their strengths and letting them know what their strengths are. I think that the reason, it took me a long time to realize that I was a pretty good singer. I mean, truthfully, you might not, because I know how much you appreciate my singing, but it took me a long time to claim that as a strength.
I'm so glad you did.
But I wrote a song called Affirmations for Children, and I think in part it came out of my awareness of the importance of that, of doing that with kids, and helping to teach children how to affirm each other and to notice the good things, to notice the strengths.
It sounds like you might have been writing it for yourself, too.
I think most of the songs we write are probably for ourselves.
I think that with every session I do with every client, I'm like, boy, I needed to hear that.
Yes.
Do you want to sing that song, that affirmation song?
Sure. Yeah, actually, I have the instrumental track with me for some of the children's songs, including that one. This is from the children's CD that I put out. It's been now about 11 years ago, 12 years ago, called Come Join the Circle, Lesson Songs for Peacemaking. These songs came out of my work with children in schools, teaching conflict resolution and diversity appreciation and these kinds of things. And I got a lot of young people involved in making the CD, so on this instrumental track, you're going to hear my then-young friend, Sarah Gish-Krause, playing the flute.
So we're going to hear the background, the
tracks,
instrumental music, mm-hmm. and you're going to sing with it.
That's right. I'm going to sing live, even though my voice isn't in great shape, but I didn't bring the other track. All I brought was the instrumental track, so I'm going to try to sing it.
Okay, so here we go. This is called Affirmations, and I do believe it's a message that Paulette was creating, not only for herself, but for you, too. So, enjoy. beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. I think I wrote it on the way in the car on the way to a training that I was doing with children in a school in Kentucky.
So the prescription, folks, is affirmations about 150 times a day, and to stop those self-put-downs, because that's what turns into put-downs of others, of course, is when we are not loving ourselves very well, it's really hard to be kind and loving to other people. So I think it's wonderful that you know that you write these songs, that you have sort of this umbrella that these are children's songs, which gives you lots of room and permission to make them fun and lively, and and it gives you a way out of that real serious headset that you get, which I know all about. But that they're really songs that would help each and every one of us if we listen to them. Because that is the truth. That's been scientifically proven. And, of course, mystics and sages have known it forever, that the more positive we are, the better we feel. The better we feel, the better we live, the better we are to other people, the better we are to ourselves. It's like that affirmation is it's like a positive feedback loop.
That's true.
Yeah.
And children, in my experience, I've been working in the schools for the last 7 years, and it's just, there's not enough of it.
Yeah. And kids really need it, just like adults really need it. Maybe the problem is the adults need it so much.
That's right.
That they don't know how to give it to the kids.
That's right. Yeah, when I used to do trainings with teachers and would do a lot of the activities that I would want them to do with children, I would do the activities with them.
Right.
And the one on affirmations, the activities I would do around that were that was the hardest for teachers to do.
Wow.
I'd have somebody stand, a teacher stand in the middle of the circle and have everybody around them offer affirmations to the person in the middle. Oh my God, you think they were going through hell.
That's right, to have to take that in.
Yeah.
It's where our culture just hasn't given us a way to do that.
That's right.
You know what, I'm noticing the time, I need to do a little radio business here. So I want you to hold that thought about taking in the positive. And I want to ask everybody who's listening to think about, you know, there's this process I do called the Wow and Love process, and it's the question always in it is, how do you give and receive love? And I've worked with hundreds of people, and almost everybody I've ever worked with has a sense that they give love real easily, but they don't really know how to receive love. And so that's what that was making me think of when you were saying that. And so I just want to leave everybody with that thought for a moment of, how do you receive love? And you might can think of that in terms of how you give yourself love, which is receiving it, but also how do you receive love, goodness, affirmations from other people as well as from yourself. And you are listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM on your dial, and also live streaming online at WAIF883.org. My name is Reverend Louisa Dyer, and I'm your host here. Every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, the show is Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within, and what we focus on here is spirituality and personal growth. We are a non-religious show focused on really practical ways to live happier, more peaceful lives, and to reclaim that vitality that comes from living our deepest truth. And my intention always is to inspire you, to help you feel more alive. And we're doing that today with an incredible guest, a friend of mine, Paulette Meyer, who has written so many songs and done so much incredible music. We've listened a lot to her Timeless Quaker Wisdom CD, and I'm thinking in the second half of the show she's going to share with us some more of her children's music, because that has really been a passion of hers, is giving kids that affirmation that she was just singing about in the song before the break, and helping the adults around them feel that so they have it to give. I think that's really what we're all doing for one another. So I'm going to put on a little bit of music here, and I'm wondering, is this a good time to play the Born to Love?
Yeah, but we could play it. That would be fine.
Oh, good. I want to make sure I have it recorded when you sing it, and I'm going to be changing my tape right now. So I'm going to put in a song and then let you sing this one when we come back. How about that?
Okay.
Okay, so what we're going to do instead is we're going to hear some more of this timeless Quaker Wisdom CD. The last song on this CD is, in my opinion, incredible. And I'm going to read you the words, and then I want you to listen. May we look upon our treasure, our furniture, and our garments, and try to discover whether the seeds of war are nourished by these, our possessions. I think everybody knows that every spiritual teacher throughout time has taught us that ego, the part of us that wants to get and have, is what keeps us from accessing that core divinity within us. And war is just another word for being against something or being blocked away from something. And so as you hear this, think about that. Are you at war with yourself? Do your possessions put you at war with yourself or with anyone else? I think it's an incredible question to ask. I will see you back here in just a moment. Enjoy.
May we look upon our treasure, our nourished by these, our possessions.
That, of course, was Paulette Meyer from her Timeless Quaker Wisdom CD, and I think she wanted to say a little something about that.
I can't have that quotation referred to without mentioning the person who wrote it, for one, which is John Woolman. And I think of him as kind of like a Quaker saint from the early 1700s in the United States. And he was an abolitionist before any abolition movement was really underway, and saw the evil of slavery and decided himself, he was a tailor, and he decided himself not to wear cotton anymore and not to wear things that were made of dyes, because the way the dyes were produced was all through horrible oppression of people in slavery. And so he's a laughing stock. You know, he walked around with these undyed woolen clothes that people thought were silly looking. And, but he just was so firm in his understanding of oppression, and not just oppression of people in slavery, but oppression of workers in all kinds of occupations, and spoke out about how everything that we use, you know, if it's coming from oppressed labor, it's tainted in a sense. And so I love John Woolman's writings, and I wanted to memorize that quotation from him. I have a song that I wrote a couple years ago that is on a similar theme, because I'm a big advocate of a local economy and localism and knowing where our things come from, if we can, you know. And so I wanted to write a song about that, but at one point in my life I had worked with refugees here in the area through Catholic Social Services, and I met a woman from Iran whose adult children had brought her over here after they had come back after the Shah was deposed. And so I was helping her get adjusted to being in the United States, and she was older, and she got a job in a hat factory downtown Cincinnati. And one day we were sitting there at her daughter's kitchen table out in the suburbs, and she just was sobbing. She just began sobbing and sobbing and told me how much she missed her home country. Mm. And a large part of it was the lack of community, and she would look outside the window and see nobody on the streets, and there wasn't anybody selling and buying things on the streets, and she just said she just could hardly stand it, the lack of connection that she experienced in this country. And so those two themes came together for me, and I wrote a song called I Want to Know. It relates to that John Woolman quote, too, that when we don't know how things that we're using, where they're made, we're living in denial, in a sense. We're living in this, I call it a veil of illusion,
right,
or delusion, you know.
Right.
So,
you know, I think it's so hard for so many people in modern culture to feel like they have the time or the energy to be aware, and it's easier to be in denial. It's easier to just say, I don't want to think about that. And because of that, I think we've cut ourselves off from our own integrity and our own principles, because we don't know where our food comes from, and we don't know where our clothes come from, and we've never really given it any thought, because so many people, all of their energy goes to survival, and there hasn't been the time or the energy or the apparent luxury to bring a level of awareness into what we think, what we do, what we say, what we eat, what we wear. It seems to a lot of people that I've talked to that they are so overwhelmed by just living that they don't even want to think about that. And I know it's something that I've been, because this has been my path my whole life. And I have, you know, I have brothers who still live in Appalachia and have never left there. And I've had these conversations with plenty of people. And basically what I get from people is, I don't care. I don't want to know. And when I hear you talking, it's like I know you feel that apathy and you're responding to it. And I am just so, I guess I admire you so much that you can take that apathy and turn it into a beautiful song. So I just really appreciate that. I wanted to tell you that.
Thank you.
And I want to tell people who are listening that if we can take our pain in some way and turn it into something that uplifts us,
yep,
or uplifts someone else, then we don't have to keep suffering in the same way. And I mean, I know I've done that with my own work. I took my own pain and tried to turn it into something that would give me a way to be of service to others. And it sounds like you've certainly done that with your music. And I'm really impressed by that. I think it's, sweet isn't the right word, but it gives me a really sweet feeling.
Well, I think that I feel generally like you in so many, many, most of us feel powerless. We're dealing with a society that's gone amok, you know, and I mean, Karl Marx, everything that Karl Marx said about the direction of capitalism, I think, has really happened, you know, and we're all alienated from work. We go off to jobs that are created by somebody else to do things that aren't necessarily for good in the world. And
right. So how do we make a difference?
And I think that any difference starts with awareness.
Yes.
And so that's why it's painful. Awareness is painful because you see the contradiction. You see the conflict from what you know to be the natural order of things. And we see how out of nature we are.
Right.
But that awareness is what, you know, it keeps me doing what I can in small ways. And if I can do some things where I'm involved with 350.org is the organization that's really working to try to prevent global warming. And, you know, if I can do something to prevent this pipeline from, the Keystone Pipeline from getting, all those things, anything we do, I think at this point, is what we need to do.
Right.
You know.
Whatever we're called to do.
Whatever we're called to do. And the challenge is, I think, in our, for us to be, stay centered in the midst of all of that.
Right.
To stay centered and to, there's a lot of Quakers that I've talked with who are from more of an old school where they really do not let themselves get caught up in all the demands of this society so much that they get clouded about what's their particular calling.
Right.
And they focus more on what they're being called to do in
right.
the midst of all of this. And they seem happier than a lot of us. But
well, I'm that way. I mean,
uh-huh.
working with Byron Katie really shifted my, because I used to be insanely frustrated at best. I was a real ecological environmental activist, and it was actually in 1980 that I had a realization that it's got to be an inside job, that externally we can't fix it. Externally, it's like it's too late. We've passed the tipping point, in my opinion. We've passed the tipping point for a physical solution. It has to be a spiritual solution. I became a spiritual activist in the early 80s because I suddenly understood a principle that I've heard many spiritual teachers talk about, and that is that if you want to save the world, save yourself. If you want to uplift humanity, uplift yourself. The best gift that you can give is to raise your own consciousness. And so what I've discovered is that through raising my own consciousness, I have a much greater impact because I have more power accessible to me than when it was lower. And so I don't focus any longer. I mean, I learned that I have to put my energy toward what I want, not what I don't want. I stopped resisting things a long time ago, and that came through the work of Byron Katie, because I finally understood through Byron Katie that I don't know for sure that something else should be happening. And it's like, I don't know for sure what God's plan is, because God is so much bigger than I am. All I know is that I have to be true to myself. And whatever it is that really matters to me, that's my calling, that's my leading. I have to focus on that. Mm. And that if I fight anything, then I'm at war. And I can't do that. It makes me sick. I have to fight for what I want. I can never fight against something. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's an interesting, it's been an interesting switch for me. It hasn't decreased my level of awareness of what's going on at all, mm-hmm. but it took away a lot of the angst. Mm-hmm. And the pain. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so if there's a spiritual principle that sort of sums that up, I would say fight for what you want rather than against what you don't want, because what you put your attention on is what that's what increases, is where you put your energy. So I wonder if you've thought about that, or if that's been part of your spiritual journey, because it seems to me like the Quaker faith is really about peace. You know, it's really about that upliftment rather than fighting something. But maybe I have it wrong.
Well, no, I think you're right in the sense that it starts with coming to peace within yourself and having that centered, that centeredness of listening, being able to listen and hear. And I think that allows you to not pay attention as much to the messages of the media and the society that you're living in, right. And has also afforded such incredible courage to Quakers throughout the centuries to speak truth to power,
yeah.
and to raise awareness in loving ways, and, you know, to challenge, and it doesn't have to be a challenge against, but challenging for,
right.
Truth, and so I don't think they're mutually exclusive. You know, I have some young friends, children of friends of mine who are young adults and are doing amazing things in the world. You know, one is working, just went off to the Dominican Republic, to investigate conditions in some of the factories down there. And there he's fighting for those people that are,
yes.
working in those factories.
Yes.
So he's fighting against oppression, but for those people. And I've just known an awfully lot of young people that are doing such wonderful work.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that their work is not spiritual or something. I think of it, all of it is necessary.
It has to be spiritual. I cannot, for the life of me, make a distinction between, to me, everything is spiritual. I can't make a distinction between anything that might not be spiritual. It's like what, mm-hmm. you eat, what you wear, what you think, who you hang out with, where you go, what you think is fun. To me, everything is part of everything else. There is I see no distinction between politics and spirituality, between social justice and spirituality. It's like, to me, spirituality is more of how in touch am I with my own truth. And am I living it? That's really spirituality,
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's everything. That's everything in life. But you know what? I'm really noticing the time here, and I want to be sure that we have time for this song if you want to do it, because I got to hear it. And
are you talking about the other song? Not the one that we're about to sing. Okay.
No, which one were you about to sing?
Oh, the one I was about to sing was about this Iranian woman.
Don't judge them.
Nope.
No.
You haven't heard this one.
I'm going to shut up and let you sing. Do we have a track?
Nope.
Okay.
I don't even have the words here. So I'm going to hope that my memory will allow me to sing it, but it just fits in with what we've been talking about. So
go for it.
I want to know where all the things that I use come from. I want to know whose hands produce them all and brought them. I want to see the faces of the ones who labored, so I can know to whom I owe my gratitude. You know what, I think I'm going to stop right there, because the whole story of the song is about this Iranian woman and her, but that's the heart of it, the messages, her plaintive cry for wanting to know where things come from and wanting to know, wanting to experience those connections that she says, you know, are born here in this country that she had at home.
Right. Well, you know, that really speaks to the interconnectedness of everything and how every spiritual teacher throughout time has said, it's one. One is the answer. And when we really get that, then we do know. It's like we want to know. We have to know. How am I a part of, and how is all this a part of me? Yeah, I think that's...
You know what? It reminds me of a children's song that I wrote that's on my album that includes this theme, too. And maybe I could do that one, because I think children's own inner, the sense of inner self-worth is undermined so much by this global economy, too. So I'd like to sing Clothes Don't Make the Person.
Clothes, hallelujah, amen. From this little Appalachian gal from the long side of the tracks, you sing that song.
It's number 8. It's on that instrumental.
Do you want to the track?
Mm-hmm. I'll just mention that I remember I sang this at a fifth grade classroom in Philadelphia once, and when I was doing some programming there with children, and afterwards, and part of the activity I do with this song with kids is to have them look at each other's labels on their clothing and see where their clothes were made.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out in this one classroom that not one piece of clothing was made in the United States. And so we were exploring why you think that is. And when we started to look at the countries where these clothes were made, how poor they were and how desperate they were for jobs. And I showed them a picture of a factory in Vietnam making Nike shoes. And this one girl said afterwards, I have a question. She said, why isn't this song on the radio? And
what's her name?
I don't remember her name.
Well, sweetie, it's going to be.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And she said, and how come we didn't learn about these things before you came and talked to us about this?
Yeah, good question, kid.
Yeah, so they were thirsty for this knowledge.
Yeah. Well, I think we are born knowing that we are one, and then we lose that sense of connection because of all the pain and the woundedness and the stuff that gets in the way. And that's really what your music is about, is bringing us, whether it's these kids' songs or whether it's the Quaker CD, it's like your music is really about bringing us back into that awareness of that oneness. So I'm ready for this if you are.
Okay.
Clothes don't make the person. Here you go. Typical reaction.
I really haven't gotten to sing that song enough, as that much with children, mm-hmm. As much as I would have liked, because I was doing a lot of programs in schools where the time was short and that kind of thing, and this one often would get kind of scrapped. But where I have sung it, the interest is really high, and looking at how much children. Just the whole thing, the children's self-esteem is so fragile,
yeah.
especially at these young pre-teen ages and that kind of thing. So it kind of opens up a window for them to look at it with each other.
Right.
So for the most part, kids have really appreciated the discussion and the consciousness raising on their part.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's been my experience, too, that people tend to think of children as... not too smart, and in my experience, children are incredibly brilliant.
That's right.
And they're so open and so eager.
Yes.
To have a new perspective.
Yes.
And I've mostly worked with adults. I've worked very little with kids. But when I have worked with kids, I have always been so astonished.
Yeah.
Because they get it so much faster than adults do. Whatever it is, it's like if you break it down into simple language, the kids go, oh, yeah, I know. It's like... They don't have a problem just shifting right on
That's
the spot.
Right. They are so with it. And I feel like we talk down to kids way too much.
Yeah.
And they're thirsty. They are thirsty for information. I may have told you once about how I had a discussion with children about their brains and about where we store memories.
No, I don't remember that.
And they were on the edge of their seats just taking in this in. About their memories and where they were in their brain, and what, how come hard memories are the ones that we often think about. And
right.
I showed them in a little diagram where the thinking part of the brain is, the cortex, and how if we have painful, hurtful things from the past memories, that if we don't really heal those, it's harder sometimes to think when those things get triggered. And they wanted to know all about triggers, and it was just... It really opened my mind. I've had a number of instances of that discussion with children where they were just so thirsty for understanding.
Yeah.
So I just think that we don't teach children. My next CD, if I ever get this recorded, get the money together and the time, is going to be called Lesson Songs, not for peacemaking like this person, but Lesson Songs for Understanding.
Uh-huh.
And I want children to understand more about the things that affect them.
Right.
And how life works.
Right.
And how it's... working on them and what they can do to
help themselves. Well, you know, I think once again, it's about the adults that are in their lives. I worked with traumatic brain injury for about 20 years, and I did a class for adults with traumatic brain injury at a community college in Asheville for about 3 years. And what I did was teach them how their brains work. And it was a very similar experience. They were all like, what? Uh-huh. Really? Uh-huh. Oh. Like, they were adults. Yeah. And they didn't, nobody, most people don't have a clue how our brains work. That must have been really cool with kids.
It was.
Yeah.
And I wrote a song called Triggered, too, which I'm going to, that's going to be on the album if I ever do it. Yeah.
Great.
But I'm not, I don't want to sing that one right now.
Okay.
I got too many other things.
Well, you know, we have very little time left, so I want to give you the floor and say that, you know, I would just invite you to talk about whatever you would like to talk about and make sure that you tell people how they can find your music if they want it.
Oh, gee. Okay.
Oh, gee, she said.
I just, I want to sing some more. Is that all right?
Yes.
And just
absolutely.
Talk through the songs. Okay, well, let's do another song that I haven't recorded on a CD yet, but it is out there as a single now. There's a wonderful website that your listeners might want to know about called songsforteaching.com.
Songsforteaching.com, okay.
Yeah. And you can find songs there for any academic subject. If your child's having a hard time learning multiplication tables, you can find songs, put the tables to song, you can find anything there, but when my children's CD came out, they started a new, I asked them if they would start a new category, and they started a category on friendship and self-esteem and character education and that kind of
wonderful.
Thing. And recently they posted a new song that I have that I don't have on an album yet, and it's up there now as a single downloadable. You can download my whole children's CD from songsforteaching.com too, but so I'd like to sing this song that they just posted up there a few weeks ago. Called Don't Judge Them.
Okay.
You know, I worked for a mental health agency for a number of years and in school services, and so I got a lot of exposure to children's mental health, and I had already been involved in peace activism at that point, but it was a lot through my work there and through my work in something called co-counseling, which I know you know about,
right.
That I became aware that the whole peace movement, our struggles, our talks, our international dialogues, or whatever we do around peacemaking, usually the raising of children is left out.
Mm.
And that's where it starts.
Yeah. For
every one of us. And if we don't get it together to start giving children, letting children heal from their hurts, letting children get accurate information about what's possible for them, you know, just if we don't start empowering children in really solid ways, we can't get peace in the world because we're going to end up with very distressed adults.
Right.
And so I've worked as an instructional assistant in the public schools for the last 7 years, primarily because I needed health insurance. And it's been a challenging job for me because I'm usually not in a position to use what I know. Because for a long time I've been freelancing in peace education and training teachers and cooperative discipline and positive approaches to classroom management and that kind of thing. And so I'm sort of not in a position to use much of what I know these days.
If someone wanted to consult with you about those things, is that something that you would be open to doing?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They could get a hold of you through the lessonsongs.com.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. But in this job as an instructional assistant, I've gotten to see more day to day what kinds of things children are up against. I see the children who are not liked by the other kids, the children who are not behaving well. So I decided to write a song because I see so much judgment. Judgment of the child by adults, judgment of the child by other children. And so I wanted to write a song for those children, and it's called Don't Judge Them. And, of course, like we said earlier, my own childhood experience was a lot of judgment. And so this song was written for myself, too. So anyway, and there is a track for this. So I'll say that my first year as an instructional assistant, I met a child who was so bossy and so much, people would call her nosy, and she would jump into other people's business all the time. And even if a piece of paper dropped on the floor from the other side of the room, she would be the first one to go try to pick it up. And a lot of children just did not like her because she just was too much in their business and telling them what to do. So I ended up getting a chance to talk with her one-on-one to find out a little bit more about her. And I found out that she was the oldest of, she was 8 years old, and she was the oldest of six children. And she was the second mother at home. And she didn't know how to do it like the other kids in that class, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that's what this song, that's ready what triggered sing? This song. Yep.
I am so sorry to say that this recording did not work properly, but you can download this song from songsforteachers.com. It is truly wonderful. We'll return to the interview now.
That. For anyone who's just tuning in, I want to let you know that you are listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM on your dial, and also live streaming on WAIF883.org. My name is Reverend Louisa Dyer, and our show every week from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern is Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. And my guest today is Ms. Paulette Myers, a good friend of mine, an incredible singer and songwriter, and a peace activist. And for myself, I really have to make a distinction between being anti-war and being pro-peace. And I'm so delighted that everything I've heard out of Paulette's mouth today is she's a peace activist, not an anti-war person, because I believe we have to really focus on what we want, not what we don't want, because we're just going to get more of what we focus on. So thank you so much for singing your songs. And, you know, I don't really think those are kids' songs at all. I think adults really need to hear those songs.
Well, we all carry around that child in us.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So we are about out of time here, and I'm wondering, is there
time for Born to Love?
Oh, absolutely.
It's a 5-minute song.
Oh, well, maybe we'll play it anyway. I just heard this song just the other night for the first time, and I do believe it's a relatively new song.
No, actually, I wrote it in 1998.
You are kidding.
No, but I've hardly ever sung it. I wrote it when I was trying to write a song for the murdered victims' families for reconciliation. They were coming on tour through Ohio. These are people who, an organization that supports people who are opposed to the death penalty for when they've had some other mm-hmm. one murdered. And that was a big, that's a story that I didn't get a chance to tell, but
right.
they had to do with my experience in Texas, because I got to go to Texas and meet up with the people from the Victim Offender Reconciliation Program down there.
And it must have been and powerful.
It was. There were people on death row that just had they all, the victims' families had such incredibly reconciling experiences, deep
right.
loving experiences that you would never thought possible.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Gives me chills. I've always, that was always one of my huge questions is, you want to kill somebody to teach them that killing somebody is wrong. It's like, that's just crazy. And so much of our culture is based around crazy ideas like that. And I think that's what raising awareness is all about, is noticing that we've been programmed with all these really crazy ideas. But we don't have to keep being programmed, mm-hmm. that we are conscious and that we are beings of free will, and that we can go, wait a minute, just because I got programmed that way doesn't mean I have to keep believing that. And we have to be willing, I think, to look at what our programming is and what our beliefs are. We have to be willing to let go what doesn't work and embrace something that does. And I'm really hoping that's part of what this song says. We forgive ourselves for not being perfect yet. Except we already are.
We were born to love, and love is what we're here for. We were born to love, and love is what we're here for. No, baby,
wrote that song, I was teaching something called reevaluation counseling, co-counseling, and it's just a phenomenal practice of deep listening and supporting each other through release of hurts, and hurts from earliest, earliest childhood hurts, and that stay with you and you're not even aware of them. But I became aware of a process of healing that I think is inherent in babies, and that's the co-counseling theory, that it's inherent in children. They come out learning how to heal from our hurts with aware love and attention from someone, but we don't often get a chance to really thoroughly recover from these hurts. And so I think even what I witnessed in Texas when I was down there was, even with something so horrid, unbelievably horrid, as the closest person in your life being killed by someone else, that it's possible to heal from that and to come out loving. And that's what I found with the early Quakers, that they were grounded in such deep love. And I think, that's what is needed in the world.
Right. So we could simply say that love is your spirituality.
don't live up to it myself, all the time by any means.
Well, who does?
Yeah. It's
the base. It's the base. Thank you so much for being on the show. And maybe we can have you back at some point and you can talk about reevaluation counseling and or co-counseling, as it's sometimes called, because I've wanted to do a show on that, and I don't think I know enough, but I think you do. So I want to thank all of our listeners today as well for joining us this time with Paulette. It has gone by so fast. I also want to just remind everybody that we are here every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. The show is Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. And the whole idea of this show, from my perspective, is that we are divinely created beings, and that when we actually tune into that, whatever you call that divine spark of life inside of you, I call it God. We can call it divine spirit, higher self, true self, unconditional love, whatever you call it, it's your birthright. And when we claim it, life begins to be a very different experience than it was before we did. And if you want some help with getting in touch with that inner divinity of your own, there is a free guided meditation on my website, which is just my name, louisadyer.com. There's also a book I've written on louisadyer.net, if you're into that. There is a Facebook page also for this show by the same name as the show, Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. And I'm really wanting people to share times when they woke up. Share your aha moments. Share what has really mattered to you in your life. If you want to talk about your spiritual journey, you can do that. If you just want to talk about a moment where everything changed, as Paulette mentioned before, I would love to hear your story on the radio, and we can do that by phone, or we can do that in person if you're in the area. So if you're on Facebook, or if you're not, this might be a good reason to check it out. Get in touch with me through my websites or that Facebook page, and maybe we'll put your story on the radio show. So we are closing out today with our theme song, which is God Is by Faith Rivera. And I always like to remind people to really listen to this song, because this song will tell you how to connect with that source of life inside of you. It's knowing that wherever you are, that's where that spirit is. And whatever you're doing, that's where you can find that spirit. Because it shows up through you. You might even say that it shows up as you. But we only know it when we're willing. So I'll let Faith tell you all about it. And I will see you back here next Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Again, I want to thank you so much, Paulette, for joining us. I've loved having you on the show. I hope you come back.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for that beautiful voice. And here is Faith Rivera telling us just how God is. Enjoy.